viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wise, yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, across the mills, across the cess. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Welcome to Scaredy Cats, part of the Everything Unscripted podcast network. I'm one of your co-hosts for this evening. We'll be doing Final Destination 3. I'm Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my sister, Mindy.
Hello, everybody. If you weren't here last week, then you do not know about the Hootie Hoo. That is just going to be my new catchphrase from now on. Hootie Hoo.
We'll get a trend in worldwide.
I love it. I think it's a great catchphrase. If you don't and you want me to fix it, give me a better one. And then we'll talk.
See what happens.
We're going to do our plugs, though. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Final Destination 3 tonight. We got a big one. But first, make sure to listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes every Wednesday after AEW. NXT's not on Wednesday anymore, so you just got one wrestling show, and then you can check those guys out. They're on also Friday after SmackDown. And before SmackDown at 6:30 is the Unscripted Wrestling Crew. That's us. We're not going to be here this week, and this weekend it's Dougie's birthday and stuff, so we're going to be – Stevie's birthday too, so we're going to be taking the weekend off. Mindy will be here Sunday. She will be the sole representative for the Everything Unscripted squad. She's going to be tackling – what are you going to be tackling on Sunday?
I'm actually not sure yet, guys. I need you to settle the debate. We're either going to be going into the story of Candyman, because he's got a movie coming up, or we may dabble in The Exorcist. Maybe.
Yes.
Just because there's another movie coming out about The Exorcist as well. So it depends on which remake I want to see more, because I really don't think both any of them should exist. But we'll see. And I know a lot of information on both. Daniel knows that.
Absolutely.
So that's why I'm trying to decide. So we'll see.
And I may not be here with her Sunday, but we will definitely have a Scaredy Cats on Sunday at 3 p.m. So we're going to get that going, and we're going to make sure to put it on the Instagram. Make sure to check out the Everything Unscripted podcast Instagram. I'm going to try to have, you know, an update for each episode that we do for all the shows. So whatever Mindy decides and we come forth with what we're going to do next week, I'll put that up there, and we'll put in a group on Facebook.
Yep, we have a Scaredy Cats podcast group on Facebook. It is public. Anyone is allowed to join, voice your opinions.
Yes.
And then over.
Absolutely. So now that we got all that out of the way, Scaredy Cats, we got Final Destination 3. This is a big one. James Wong returns to direct. Also,
and this is Daniel's favorite scary movie, guys.
Well, it's one of the – I don't know if it takes the top spot. It's my favorite Final Destination movie. I love this movie since I was a kid. It's in my top five for sure, yeah. I would not – ever say that. This one, it did pretty good numbers. The budget was $25 million for this one. Yeah, you can tell by the special effects, but it made $118 million. It did really well. It's a little different from the second one because it exists in the same universe as the movies, and they do bring up the characters a little bit, but this is the first one in the series that doesn't have any returning characters. The only one you get is Tony Todd. He's not in it or does anything, but he does voice the little demon in the the theme park, right? Oh yeah, I know this thing very well. And so Glenn Morgan, who wrote the screenplay for the first film, he didn't return for the second one. So this is Morgan and Wong coming back to kind of take it back to its roots. And another thing that I found out doing research for this thing, Mindy, is one thing that Wong did not like about the second one was that the characters really didn't have anything in common or weren't friends prior to what brought them all together, which was the car crash.
Yeah, he thought there should have been more of a connection.
Yeah, so that's why he wanted to have high schoolers again in this setting that are good friends and, you know, have more of a bond between
them. Well, also typical with any scary movie, they normally always go after a group of high school kids or or a group of college kids.
Yeah.
You don't normally see a group of middle-agers unless you're it being attacked.
Yeah, exactly. One of the big things about this movie, and we're not going to talk about it too much. I'm just going to say that it was there, is on the DVD, the Thrill Ride edition, and the Choose Your Fate. And you could kind of choose different scenario for the characters. I haven't seen that one in a long time.
It's so creepy, though.
It's awesome, and it adds a dimension to the movie. But to me, I don't – this is the movie. This is the canon. This is part of the final.
Yeah, we're not
going
to be going over the extended cut when they all survive the train and everything. We don't need to do
all
that.
All that is just special features kind of to make it cool. But that, to me, that's not really a part of the movie.
It's
not. So – the first thing I want to ask you, Mindy, is because you're a fan of the series and you find it very creepy because you're a slasher fan. Now, this is something we're different that we're covering here because we're not dealing with a soul killer or killers. We're dealing with death itself. What do you think death and that gimmick for Final Destination adds to the horror movie genre?
Basically, the suspense of whatever you do. Like, whether it be washing your clothes or drying your clothes or taking your dog out for a walk.
Yeah.
Anything like that. And it brought life to that situation that could be a horror movie. That could be your demise. You could be walking past a lawnmower and get shot at in the eye.
Right.
A piece of glass. That can happen.
Yeah.
You could slip on the floor on water in the bathroom and get tangled up in a clothesline. That can happen.
Exactly. I mean, the tanning thing, it can happen.
Exactly. Know? I mean, every single situation, even the roller coaster, as weird as it may be, it can still happen. And that's the creepiest thing that I have always thought about these movies, because I mean, I know y'all don't really know me except for the people that do. Much love, thank you. But I am a person that is very clumsy. I am very accident prone. I had my fifth concussion by the time Daniel was born. We're 7.5 years apart, so do you math, people. I'm 31 years old. I've had 8 concussions. That's more than a football. Next one, falling up the stairs, not down. Up.
Yeah, I've only had 3, and I am...
He was a football player!
Yeah, I was an athlete all through high school. It's nuts. But so, yeah, and I get why that would resonate and kind of make you nervous and anxiety.
That's what made me so scared, and it gave me such suspense. Because it's like, oh my God, this could happen to me.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And I feel like that is what made it scary, kept it scary. And I think that's what really stood out to people about the first 3. Now, a lot of people that know me, especially Daniel, knows I hate the fourth one. I mean, I know we're going to have to go over it. We have to do everything for everyone.
Racetrack one, right? Is that the fourth one? Yeah.
I hate the fourth one. There is no way that a guy is going to be sucked through a drain pipe. Come on. Like, that's Rugrats bullshit.
Yeah, you liked 5, right?
Yes, I do like 5, but that is because people, it wraps up the story.
Yeah.
It's all about these group of colleagues that's no longer teenagers. The colleagues. And the one who happens to be a chef, as well as the job that he's going away on the trip for and whatnot, and they survive and everything, and he finds out that his trip to Paris has been canceled because the girl that was his girlfriend, got really traumatized by everything. But then after all is all said and done, and they beat it and whatnot, they get on the plane, which is flight 180. And then you realize, and then you remember, oh shit, when they open this up, they put the year as 2000. That's when it happened.
The plane crash.
It was in June. And the fifth one was based in the summer right beforehand. So it tied everything together. Honestly, I do know that they're coming out with a 6th one. I probably won't watch it.
Really?
Just because I've already got my ties. I've already gotten to tie everything together and close the story, ship the book, and move back.
Okay, well, kind of, I mean, that's like, I mean, we're moving forward because that was going to be one of my last questions was, is there more room in this franchise for more installments?
Well, there's going to be anyway, whether we want to or not.
Yeah, but you don't think the story fits it anymore? You think it should be over now?
Unless they do another story. In another town. Not really, reboot, but like a soft reboot.
Yeah, like no Alex, no completely different people, right?
Exactly. Like completely different town, completely different people, different scenario.
Yeah. And the thing is because this does differ from the first two. I mean, like I said earlier, we have the story and stuff. Do you think this was a good follow-up for the first two? Because, I mean, I've said it's my favorite, but do you think it does the other two justice as in a trilogy? And
yeah, absolutely. Honestly, if I didn't like the fifth one so much, I would say that they probably could have ended with this one.
Yes.
It was really, really, really good. I really enjoyed it. There were some moments where it even caused me to get up out of the room. And I'm going to tell you right now, people, I am 31 years old. At this point in my life, I've been watching horror for 31 years. Thanks to my wonderful father. And, if you were a horror movie that can get me to get up and walk out of the room, have goosebumps, be shaken, and just not want to see it, not want to hear it, then you've done your job.
Yeah.
You really have, especially for me, because like Daniel has even witnessed, as scared of these three movies as I was when I was younger, I continued to try and watch them.
Yes, you did.
Because I was not going to let a movie beat me. No. I've learned since I was an infant that movies are movies. They're not real. I got this. But it did. It took me quite a few times to be okay with them.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, honestly, it's got your man, Ryan Merriman, in there.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, it's got my girl, Alex Johnson. And it's got a couple other teenagers that have been in other things.
What do you think about Merriman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead of, you know, Scott Pilgrim fame? And she's been in a couple other things. What do you think of those two as the leads and how they drive the story forward?
Yeah, really good chemistry for two people that hated each other.
Yeah, because it feels like the story doesn't set them up to have that good of chemistry because he's just like the friend of the boyfriend.
Who she finds out with that she's going to break, that her best friend is going to break up with him.
Yeah, he's
going to
dump him.
She
was
going to
dump him. Yeah.
While he was getting ready to shop for ring for.
Yeah.
So it's two different sides of a relationship. He thought they were madly in love. She was like, whoa, boy. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Nay.
Well, that kind of works for me, though, because I like that it wasn't so close, and it's like death is so crazy and real that it brought these two people that aren't really friends together.
Yeah,
you know?
Made them friends.
And not even friends. It's just like, we got to get through this to survive, you know, so we got to go through all these scenarios and shit.
Yeah, so we haven't got to like each other or not.
Yeah, and work together a little bit and try to talk to different people. And, I mean, these are the worst salesmen on earth because every person they go to try to get them, like, ends up fucking dying in 15 seconds.
Yeah,
later.
I have a feeling that you have to be the most helpful to death.
Yeah, it's almost like, why didn't they get around? I'm surprised the cops didn't start thinking that they were doing it because they're always around and then someone's getting fucked up. Another thing, before we really get into the plot and, of course, the sweet, sweet kills, the setup here. We don't have a car crash. We don't have an airplane crash. Two very real things, two very anxiety-driven things that scares people and made that kind of nervous energy in the first two movies. Now we have a roller coaster crash. And it's kind of genius because you're marketing towards teenagers and that culture. And a roller coaster is another mechanical thing that can go very wrong and hurt a lot of people. And they have in the world before. Do you think this was a good enough backdrop as the car crash and the airplane crash? Do you think a roller coaster was strong?
Absolutely. Especially because a lot of people might not know this, but this is actually based on something that really happened. And the Six Flags. While I can't remember the exact date, sorry, people. It was actually rumored, though, that a bunch of people, while it was on the news, saw a young boy fall, but to this day, there's still been no known casualties. So I'm not going to say anyone died or anything because that's just rumor. But these people were stuck upside down. I mean, thank God their safety things held them together and whatnot, as in the third movie, because they didn't. But they were literally up there for like a good hour, hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And if the safety teams didn't restrain them, like if they would have just went like they did in the movie, those people would have been screwed. There's no way you can hang upside down with nothing to hold on to for an hour.
I heard this scene was hell to shoot, too. I heard that this was a very outrageous, hard scene. I mean, they made it look beautiful, but apparently the actors went through like 10 hours straight. Like they were really putting in work and trying to get the stunts right and trying to get everything looking proper. And they were like hanging down for like 30 minutes at a time between the shoots.
Well, that's because James Wan is a perfectionist.
Absolutely.
And everything that he does, because a lot of people don't know this, but he actually started off as a special effects coordinator for horror movies at first before he started directing. And I love him as both. He's very good. He found his genre, so to speak.
Yeah. No, he definitely did.
He's very good for horror
genre. And speaking of the roller coaster, I remember at Darien Lake one year. This is a deep cut for our Western New York fans. But I was on the Mind Eraser, and I had some of us where they had to stop the ride, and we're dangling. We weren't upside down, but our feet were dangling.
Yeah, because that's how the Mind Eraser works, people. You only are strapped in by your shoulders, and it's so creepy.
Yeah, and I never on Earth wish I hadn't seen a movie so much than when I was in that situation. It's like, why the fuck did I have to watch Final Destination 3? Because I'm just hanging there like, they better fix this. Because watching that, I mean, like, it is, we've talked about a lot of movies, and some of them we've said don't get the scare factor down. This has creepiness and the eerie vibe all over it, especially the beginning scene in the theme park with the smoke and the devil and everything. I did feel the creepy vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like they did that well, and the aesthetic of this movie was very well done.
Oh, yeah. They did a very, very good job, especially, like, the details, like, relating the pictures to how the characters were going to eventually end up, and also, like, with, you said, like, Tony Todd being the devil, they also had, like, four or five other mentionings in the theme park of hell.
Yeah.
And the devil.
Yeah, it's
that's
very hell-oriented. Yeah. I mean, there are theme parks like that with, like, creepy rides.
Yeah, but it's normally, like, a day.
Yeah.
That they do it. Like, there's normally, like, a Halloween thing that they do. Like, these kids are getting ready to graduate and go on to the next part of their lives.
Yeah.
And it's a little ironic to me that it happened in a theme park that's dedicated to hell.
Now, usually death is more basic in the other two movies, and death kind of just does what it wants. It doesn't really have a motivation. Now we got the picture gimmick. We got the pictures as Frankie took them, which we'll talk about Frankie. He's a creepy, bald guy who just wants cheeks the whole movie. And his name's Frankie Cheeks, by the way.
I know.
Yeah, he just wants to clap cheeks. And Frankie's taking all these pictures, and it kind of, like, shows you how people are going to die, right? It does a bit.
No, Daniel, hold up. Guys, I'm going to fix them real quick. So Frankie had the camcorder that he had for himself.
Yeah.
The girl, Ryan Berryman's opposite, not his girlfriend, but the one he ended up sitting with, Wendy.
Yeah.
She had the camera. she was the editor of the yearbook.
Yeah, because she was the photographer. She was taking pictures.
Yes.
My bad. But still, the pictures were taken, and that's how people supposedly died.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you see the I mean,
Frankie did kill them, unfortunately, on the roller coaster with his camcorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did kill them because he had his camcorder out when he got told not to, and it got wrapped around the tracks.
And I know Death's smart and Death does whatever it wants to do. Do you think it's a little far-fetched that Death is like, oh, these pictures are cool, I'm going to kill people like how these pictures look? And that's
yeah,
the
that's
way
a little far-fetched. That's a little far. I mean, we're talking about Death here. We're not talking about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, these pictures look cool. Like, and his head looks kind of mush. Let's squish his head with weights. That would be really cool. Let's do that.
Yeah, it would be different if, like, this is a more supernatural, like, poltergeist that was coming after him or something like that. But they're saying it's Death, and Death doesn't care either way. It just needs to get its due. If that's true, then why is it going to leave menacing photographs for the kids?
That's funny.
It's just not going to happen.
By the way, the roller coaster you use is the Corkscrew roller coaster of Vancouver's Playland, just if you ever wanted to know that. That's a deep cut. The story itself, what did you think? Because you said you liked the chemistry. A lot of the side characters are, you know, stereotypical horror teenagers.
FCR Misery Business!
Yes. You got... obviously, the perv Frankie, you got the jock, you got the two goths, the couple, which obviously...
it's actually Aaron and Ian.
Aaron and Ian, yes.
But I really like to call them MCR and the Jesus.
Yeah, that's your squad.
One of my favorite YouTubers pinned it a while ago, but I haven't seen that for a while. So... yeah, they, yeah, absolutely. But other than that, like, I really don't know where any of these ones came from.
I mean, and they're here for the cool death scenes. It's not like you're not supposed to feel bad for the two girls frying in a tanning bed. You're not supposed to have emotion for... did you? I didn't give a shit. I thought it was funny.
I felt so bad. No, I had to leave the room during that shit. They were getting barbecued.
Oh, like, yeah, but they had no personality. So they were the typical dumb, like,
I get that. I just, girls. Their kill was too cringeworthy for me. I had to leave.
That is known still as one of the best death scenes in horror. What
and
do you
I
think
get
about
that.
That?
I get that. I agree with that. I really do. I think it is a great death scene. I just had trouble watching it the first few times.
Yeah.
It made me cringe. I mean, the only reason it doesn't make me cringe anymore is because I found that I can never go in a tanning bed because of how pale I am. So therefore, I had no reason to fear tanning beds because I can't go in one.
Well, now that we're talking about kills, and there's a few of them we got to bring them up because this is that's what this movie is. That's why people watch this thing, is mm-hmm. for the cool death scenes. And what is your favorite kill? Is it that one, or do you have a different top kill for this evening?
Oh, I would say it is between the tanning bed and the weight room.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I really did appreciate the beginning with the roller coaster and whatnot. That was really awesome.
Yeah, that was well done.
I loved that. And I really liked the train at the end and everything. But I honestly feel like those two were the most gasp-worthy. Not so much the tanning bed, because you kind of saw it happening. But the weight room, that you didn't see it happening.
Well,
in a way...
it was so intense where it's like something's about to happen and the big guys are like lifting, like, oh, it's like, I can't fucking die. And he's like screaming and it's intense. It's like something's about to happen here. But when it happens, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, because when it happens at first, people, it's just swords that were above him falling down and nothing happened to him. And he continued to lift weights. And when he did that, that's when he crushed his head.
Yeah.
So you kind of really thought he was out of the running. At least I did. I thought he was safe, honestly. And then boom.
Yeah.
So what was your favorite?
Big fan. You mentioned the young lady earlier, Erin, I believe.
Misery Business, a.k.a. Alex Johnson.
A.k.a. Mrs. Nailgun.
Yeah.
And that was just so brutally done. It gave a little emotion because you can tell Ian, even though they didn't, McKinley, he's kind of a dick, and he always seemed like a prick. And him getting crushed by the sign is another cool one, by the way. Because he gets swatted like a fly by that big-ass sign, and he gets killed by his own name, which is also cool. But you felt a genuine, like, he really cared for her. Like, he was really emotional when she got, you know, scrapped up with that nail gun.
Well, because she was the only one that he cared for.
Yeah, and it set up something, and it kind of set up him as, like, another villain along with Death. And it's like, this is doing something different. You know, this—I mean, we've had dicks in this franchise in the past, but this is like another guy that, like, now it's like he thinks he's controlling it, and like now his turn's next or someone else's turn, so he's gonna do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And when he shows up at the circus, like, how cool is that? That
yeah,
whole
the
circus
carnival
scene.
When
yeah.
he's like walking next door and taking them, but they're not like next to each other yet.
Yeah.
And he like gets in front of her, and she's trying to get away from him, and he's like, "Wait, what's wrong? Do I cause your death?" Holy. I cause your death.
Yeah, it's very menacing. I could always see him as like a serial killer in a slasher movie. Or
absolutely.
Because he did really well in that. Once he like, because first he was the cynical jerk that's like, no, this isn't real. Death is like, you guys are stupid. And then he's like, oh, this is happening. Now I'm going to be a scumbag because I just lost what I love. So now I'm going to fuck with these people.
And take what they love.
Yeah, and he just looked very menacing, and he did very well in the role, I think. Even though it's like a good 15 minutes only, it's still like enough to kind of drive it.
Exactly. It's still enough to make him somewhat of a bad guy.
Yeah, in a movie where you don't have bad guys except for Death. So it is kind of cool
to
see.
And that's why he died.
Yeah.
Because he can't be a bad guy.
That's like not today. There's one bad guy here. The guy that played Lewis, by the way. Who got crushed by, his name's Texas Battle, so just give him that to have the coolest name of all time, because that just sounds like a badass right there. I mean, I liked the little sister we didn't see much of. She was she was in the train scene at the end, right?
Yes, and she was also with them
at
the fair.
Yes, the fair.
Remember, her hair got wrapped around something with the... Cat, I was to help horses, and the horse took off.
Well, yeah, because that's why Wendy went to the fair, right? Because
she
knew the little sister was next.
Well, because she realized she had fallen asleep at her computer, but she realized when she woke up and saw that her bracelet was gone, and she started thinking about the bracelet, she realized, oh, shit, that bracelet was in the photo when I wasn't wearing it. Mm-hmm. My sister was. So that added a different element onto her. And then when she's driving and you got that song, that's just like, it's so oldies, but it's so creepy.
Yeah, they do it in such a creepy way.
Because it's like there's someone waiting behind you. And like, you look in her rear view, because she looks in her rear view, and there's McKinley putting her down.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow, which one of them is going to get her first, him or Death?
Yeah, I thought the movie did very well of keeping it creepy and eerie, and I respected that, because it's hard to do with horror movies, because everyone wants that, but it's hard to capitalize and get that.
And, like, in the fourth and fifth one, they didn't have that.
That's non-existent.
No, they didn't have any songs that tied to anything that was going on.
And the creepiness in the first and second were kind of given by Tony Todd. He was the creepy part. He wasn't the music, but just him showing up, and he's like, "Yeah, you're all fucked."
let's review here, people. He didn't show up. He really didn't. And the first one, Claire and Alex had broken into the mortuary, the funeral home, or whatever. And went down into the morgue themselves and found him. He just knew that they were coming. That's what he said both times.
Yeah.
Is that he knew they were coming, but he didn't go find them.
No, I know, but what I'm saying, him being there provided the creepy atmosphere. Because those scenes were fucking terrifying. Not just like, oh, I'm scared, but just like the vibe around here. Like, it's so eerie. Anything could happen. And his deep voice.
I love Tony Todd, man. He is the Morgan Freeman of four.
Yes, he's amazing. So having him do that, that was kind of made up for it. But the music kind of helped without having him.
Yeah, exactly.
And just the atmosphere and everything was creepy.
Yeah.
Lamest kill, I'm going to have to give it to that train scene. That ending did not do it for me. I thought it was rather stupid.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, are they dead? Like, do they count as dead now?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's just how it ended. Everyone died. There you go.
I liked the four premonition train scene. I liked that one.
Yeah.
I liked her premonition with the train scene. I liked that, but I didn't like how they just ended it.
Yeah, and then it's like you took a whole other synopsis. Like, now, like, the fourth people, like, that's why they had to do race cars. They probably wanted to do a train. Like, what the hell? But, I mean, it was okay. It's just, like, Ryan Merriman showing, like, and he looked kind of emo at that point, and it's like, oh, my God. Give me a
break. Oh, you loved Ryan Merriman. Shut up.
I mean, he was a great actor. He was great in this movie, and I loved him as the lead character. Luck of the Irish, fantastic movie. This is a fantastic movie. He was actually he was good in The Ring when he got fucked up, when he was the boyfriend.
People don't hate us for him bringing up Luck of the Irish.
That's a great film. I mean, I don't think that touches any other horror show on earth, but Luck of the Irish is a great movie. Ryan Merriman, he did good in this movie. I just don't like when he showed up at the end and his hair's longer and he's like sad. He's probably wearing eyeliner. He listens to Fall Out Boy now. I'm just kidding. But he's just like, I don't know. I like the jock he was portraying. I guess they were trying to portray him growing up there, but it just fell flat for me. And then her and her little sister, like the connection that I saw the whole movie just didn't seem there anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, now they're dead. There you go. And
yeah, you kind of could see it happening.
I would have opted for something a bit more creative. I thought the ending fell flat compared to the rest of the movie. Like, end it at that circuit. I keep saying circus fair, whatever, the carnival, whatever the hell. End it there, and I think you have a good quality, solid ending. Like that.
Exactly. The fireworks going off in Ryan's face.
Oh, yeah, because that's how he's supposed to.
Oh, my God. That would have been wonderful if, like, that had actually happened. He would have actually died. Sorry, Ryan. I love you. But still.
Yeah.
A good kill of a good kill, bro. You can't tell me nothing. Good kill of a good kill.
I thought he was good. I mean, he does die technically, but I figured he was going to. I didn't think the three of them needed to survive. You could either take him or the little sister out of the equation.
I thought the little sister come on the bike.
Yeah, she was very... I mean, she was just there to set up that final thing at the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be like, oh, that's her picture.
But what sucks is, like, right after what happens to McKinley, one of her friends is like, oh, my gosh, I was on that roller coaster with you. And then she gets impaled by the fly. What did she do? She ain't just shit. And
yeah.
Who was she?
Yeah.
I look her up and her name's Fury or something. I don't know who she is.
That's just a friend on the ride with her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she just, like, boom, like, it's a flag right there when it's like, oh.
That was just evident.
Why didn't that happen to Wendy's sister? Yeah, but why didn't that happen to Wendy's sister, though?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That could have...
I really felt like that should have been Julie's death.
Since we've covered a lot of the deaths, we do have to talk about Mr. Cheeks, because it takes place in one of my favorite venues on Earth, a fast food restaurant. They're in the drive-thru. This is another scene that I read up about. It was not a fast food building. It was just a regular building, and James Wan's like, he gave him 4 hours, like, let's make this into a McDonald's, baby. Mm-hmm. And they made it look as much like a drive-thru as I could. And good for the set design crew. Let's shout them out. Good for that.
Oh, yeah.
And the director and everything. But a line of dialogue that bothers me in that scene is I don't like SpongeBob, right? Hate SpongeBob. I've made that clear. But Ryan Merriman is not an idiot for knowing that SpongeBob lives under the sea. Like, he just said, well, SpongeBob lives under the sea. She's like, it's sad you know that. Everyone fucking knows that, okay?
I know. It begins with he lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Yeah, like, that's the one thing. Don't make fun of him. But Frankie Cheeks, yes, I just like saying his name. Mr. Cheeks, he gets hit by the truck, right? Or the motor flies out of
the motor in the truck.
Out of Kevin's car. Yeah, and it just slices the back of Frankie's head. This is brutal.
Brutality at its best.
Yeah, it's brutality at its best. It's savagery. It's like they didn't really pull stops at showing this one. Like you saw them in the back of his head. It's like, oh my God, he's done.
I'm surprised I got a PG-13 rating after that one.
Yeah.
That was pretty gruesome. I mean, I enjoyed it. That was pretty gruesome. And I will have to say, I do love Mr. Cheeks and the comedy that he brings.
I mean, yeah, he's just a prick.
He's just a prick, and he's just a comedic throwaway character. Kind of like the black guy. I mean, they're at the funeral, and he walks up to Ryan Merriman, and he's like, yo, my funeral is ever this fucking boring. Please slip a PCP in with me or something.
Yeah.
Or a PSP. So he can play video games at his own damn funeral.
Yeah, I mean, if you slip PSP or PCP, he'd be having a great time.
Okay. All right. I would like everyone to get over the fact that sometimes I say things wrong, pronunciate things wrong, sometimes I just say shit.
Yeah, he said throw a video game console in there, basically, so my shit's not this boring. He was funny. I do like it, though, because this is – people compare it to Scream a little bit with the meta-ness, except it's not a slasher. But
it's very self-aware.
It's very self-aware, but I don't think the comedy's too much. Mm-hmm. Cheeks is the only one that's really, like, funny, and he's kind of funny in a, oh, this guy's a jerk, slime ball.
Ian and Aaron are also comedic in their own kind of way.
A bit. They're all just kind of
snide. Because Ian's like, oh my God, you know what? I bet Jesus was drinking red wine the day before his crucifixion. And that was his blood. Like, I loved that.
Yeah.
I loved the way that he just completely took all of their theories, all of their facts, and it's just, I'm going to shit on you. I'm going to shit on you. And I'm going to shit on you.
I mean, yeah, it's good the way they did that no one believed them. Because it is a tough thing to wrap your head around. How are you going to believe that in a real life scenario? That's
you won it.
So it is kind of cool that the teams act like, even though they do get kind of like cocky and gimmicky. It's like, oh, this guy's the jock. This guy's the goth.
Very clicky. Very clicky.
And they all very much have that attitude to where, like, no, Kevin and Wendy, you're stupid. But then, I mean, obviously, Kevin and Wendy know what they're talking about.
Yeah, because at least, like, in the first one, they had people backing them.
Yeah.
Like, Alex and Claire. Like, they finally got... I mean, it took Billy Ted being taken off by a license plate, but they still got the respect of the people they needed to be like, oh, shit, this really is happening, and it's not their fault.
Yeah.
So I feel like the third one didn't really have that. I had Alex and Claire in the first one, and everybody backed them, and he had the sheriff and Allison and the sex. In the second one, and because of Clear, everyone really believed them and what was going on.
Yeah, they started to work. This is another one that, like, the second one was very a group mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they didn't have anything in common, like, they were all...
They started to find out that they actually had something in common with one
E. Yeah, and they were sticking together. It's like, oh, there was a couple non-believers, but... And this, like, everyone's like, no, this, there's no way this could be happening.
Yeah, they got rid of the non-believers in two clicks, though.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I think there was, like, three people that didn't believe what was going on. They got rid of them real quick.
Everyone that walked in that elevator, that was pretty much what that elevator scene was. Everyone's like, I'm gone, I'm done with this. And then the one girl's, like, head gets torn off almost.
Yeah, but then it gets the colored man, I can't remember his name. It gets him to be like, oh, my God, this is really happening.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a wake-up call to everybody. Whereas her son and the lotto winner were kind of just like throwaway deaths. But I do love the lotto winner's death.
Oh, his death was amazing.
Because there were like seven things that could have happened.
Yeah.
That just happened at back to back to back. And he still gets out of his apartment. And then his fire escape's like, screw you. And
yeah, exactly. So now that we've covered a lot of this, one thing I do want to ask you, where do you think it stacks up with the first two? And how would you kind of rank them as in quality?
First one definitely is the pendulum of the Final Destination series.
Really?
Honestly. Second was still really good. I don't really like sequels, but it did its job. This one fell a little flat, a little bit, but it was good for what they were trying to get across. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6 out of 10. That seems appropriate. Because it was good. It just wasn't, oh my God, good.
So you're giving it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. But it was like I said, it did its job, but unfortunately, it led to the other ones being,
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you cannot get sucked through a public pool's pipe. It is too small.
Yeah.
It cannot suck your guts out.
It should be.
That's something that little kids fear about.
Yeah.
I take care of a toddler, people, and he's afraid that the toilet monster is going to come up and suck his butt through when he goes potty. And that's more rational of a fear than Mr. Coin Guy.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense to me. And also, if you drop a coin in a pool, just let it go. Go get another coin. Exactly. Like, so what? It's when your favorite coin. I'm telling you right now, your parents lost the shit. They fused it over again and give it to you like it was the same thing. Like, oh, no, sweetheart, we found it. Yeah. No. Parents do that shit with everything. Blankets, goldfish, puppies. Depends on how sophisticated the kid is.
Yeah, but I had five the goldfish about five separate times. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was the beta fish, yeah. By the way, people. It wasn't a goldfish.
Well, he did.
I knew he...
I thought he did.
Daniel thought he lost for like 10 years.
All right, my rating for this thing. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different. Usually, we've agreed on the show about a lot of the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, we're going to disagree. There's no way I can give this a 6 out of 10. I'm giving this a solid 8.5. Great movie, best in the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I love everything that it did. I thought the second one was too close to the first and too much of a rehash. I like the third one, how they went different a little bit, but still kind of connected it. A lot of things in this movie did it for me. The kills, the characters, the dialogue. I thought it was a good movie, so I'm going 8.5. Right. And is there anything else you want to add before we go home, Mindy?
Nothing really. I mean, thank you, everyone, for joining this next week. I still got to make up my damn mind and let you guys know what I'm going to do.
Right.
Whether it's going to be the Candyman or it's going to be the Exorcist. But since you are going to be with me, who is more the historian type, we are going to go over the backstory of both, not just the movies. Because both are actually based on a true story.
Yeah, well, I mean, we chose stuff that's not too much backstory-driven stuff like remakes in this so far anyway.
Yeah. So we're really going to devil into a really good one then. Really gritty, but also true. So, we'll see.
All right. Well, Scary Cat family, thanks for joining us. This was a good one, a frightful, scary one.
I'm just going to give y'all a hoodie-hoo.
Hoodie-hoo. We'll see everybody next week.
Take a little walk to the
acid trap, where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as he shifts and cracks, where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, across the mills, across the stacks, on a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.